Thank you for your time today, David Tinakwe.
Tinakwe.
Thank you. Just talking with Winston as well earlier in the program about the Second Harbour Crossing, and he rattled off some numbers of lost money in the consultation process. It was rattling up to millions of dollars in consultation fees and in logistics and investigative studies into potential crossings, tunnels, etc. What's your gut feeling about the need to invest in a second harbour crossing, and would you favour another bridge, or have you any thoughts about tunnelling, etc.? David, what do you think needs to happen here?
Well, first of all, there's got to be another crossing. Even if you think that the bridge we have is adequate, it is very old. I think it was built in 1957 or 59. It often has to be closed when there's high winds, closed for large trucks if there's bad weather conditions. That's not really the way you think about a first-class city in the greatest country in the world. That sounds third world to me. So there has to be a replacement, because otherwise Auckland is effectively divided in half, and you don't have a big city divided in half. That's two small cities. So has to happen, because when you have a big city connected together, there's more opportunities to work. There's more opportunities for business to grow and employ people, and there's more opportunities to shop and get a better deal, and so on. So it has to happen. Next question is, how does it happen? I'm not the right person to say if it should be a bridge or a tunnel. I'm an electrical engineer, but I haven't been one for about 20 years, and I don't pretend that I know it all. What has to happen is that somebody who actually does have the right expertise needs to be appointed. The government has agreed to do that now, and that person needs to say, right, what's the plan of work? Is it a bridge or a tunnel? Is there another option, what we're calling a market-led solution, where somebody from outside New Zealand says, hey, look, you guys should think about doing it this way. Yeah, I think we should be open to other ideas. But at the end of that process, say another year's time, they say, right, folks, here's what we've decided so far. Here's the plan. Let's get on with the next stage of fully designing it, contracting it out, and getting it built. That is what should have happened back in 2022. But the Labour Party basically wanted to put out a press release saying that they were going to do something. And as it turns out, they hadn't done their homework. So we spent $106 million. We spent 4 years. The old bridge has continued to deteriorate. No progress has been made. What this government has done is grab the bull by the horns and say, right, here's the program, here's what's going to happen, here's when the decisions are going to be made, and that's going to lead to another bridge, so we're not a third world city.
Well, Tenakwe, am I right to believe that there's an interesting conversation looking at cross-party support for major infrastructural investments? Which makes sense. This to and fro at the changing of the guard when it does occur, and it might or might not in November, we're not sure, that there is some consensus of the need to invest in these costly infrastructure projects that can span decades and obviously multiple parliamentary terms. What might you say of that consensus, if you will, or collaboration that was alluded to a week or two back in Parliament?
Well, Dale, I'd say you're 100% correct. An infrastructure project usually takes about 10 years. So if you look at the City Rail Link, going to be officially open next month, having been finally commissioned in 2016. So there's your 10 years. In that time, there's been a couple of changes of government. At one point, we had a whole lot of roads of national significance ready to go. Labour came in, cancelled those, said instead we would have light rail in Auckland and a cycle bridge over the Harbour Bridge. None of that happened. They didn't get it started. We came in, cancelled those, tried to reinstate some of the roads of national significance, discovered that none of the work on the soil testing and geotech and design and land acquisition and so on that you require for building those roads had been done for 6 years, so we're now behind on that. And the net effect is, I can sit here and say it's all their fault. If you interviewed one of them, they'd say it's all my fault. But for the people sitting at home, nothing's been built. So what do you need to make this happen? You actually need a consensus across parties that this is the plan for New Zealand over the next 10 or 20 years. These are the things that were being built. And for the first time under this government, we've actually reached out to the Labor Party. Tough job reaching out to the likes of the Greens, but we've reached out to the Labor Party and said, look, will you guys sign up to this joint plan over the next 10 years? And they have. So, you know, it's taken a long time, but after the last decade of stopping and starting, I think politicians right across the parliament, or most of it, have got the message. People want to see stuff get built, and that is starting to happen.
The adversarial nature of politics, could that be changed, do you think, where it's almost your work to discredit your opponents rather than perhaps collectively building on ideas that all believe to be a better way forward? What do you make of, well, sort of automatically trying to put down the other guy?
Well, I don't think you should automatically try to put down the other guy. And it's certainly popular to say, you know, why can't the politicians just put aside their bickering and all get along and work for the good of the country? But I would say to people, I understand why you'd say that, but be careful what you wish for, because sometimes governments get things wrong and you want to be able to vote for someone who will go and say that they've got it wrong. So you look at a country like China, you know, they make a lot of progress. No one really argues with the government, not very smart to criticize the government in China. As a result, they get stuff done, but they have not a great record on other things like freedom of speech and human rights and so on. And it may turn out that in the long term, because they don't have a system that listens to dissenting voices, their economic strategy is not as good as it first appeared. That's a story for another day. But I just make the point that, you know, while politics is often messy and it's popular to say, I'm the one who will, you know, make everyone work together and I'm above it and blah, blah, blah. Well, at the end of the day, my job is to listen to New Zealanders and express their views in the political process. And I'm never going to shy away from doing that, because I think it might be popular to be Mr. Nice Guy. It probably would be, but that's not democracy.
Has your success in Epsom driven Goldsmith into the hills?
Well, I don't know, poor old Goldie. He's got 11 portfolios now. You know, the ACT Party's been saying that we should consolidate and fewer ministers doing more work, but also simplifying the portfolios. Now, it seems like the National Party have started to take our advice and sort of merged the government all into one person, which is now Paul Goldsmith. He's become responsible for everything, it feels like. But look, as far as the electorate, when Chris Pink resigned last week, I think he had a look at standing in Kaiporiki Maharangi, and then he discovered that because the nominations are already done in the National Party, he's not allowed to move. So he's back here in Epsom, but he's kind of told everybody that he wouldn't be if he didn't have to be. But hey, look, you know, I think Goldie's a good guy. I have a lot of fun chatting to him and working with him over the years. And you know, my pitch to the Epsom electorate will be, I'm the guy that does the work and answers the phone and serves our community.
Is it appropriate for one guy to have 11 ministerial hats on?
Let's see how he goes. If he performs the job well, then perhaps. But I would say that our government has got too big, too complicated. You know, we've got 82 odd portfolios. We've got 39 government departments. We've got 28 ministers. Some ministers are in charge of 7 departments. Now we've got one in charge of 11 departments. You know, there's some departments that have 23 ministers that are in charge of them. I mean, it is a big bowl of spaghetti down there. And in my view, New Zealanders would get better value for their taxes if you had a smaller group of ministers with clearer objectives. And if they were to do that, then we'd all be in a much better place.
Tēnā koe, David Seymour with us this morning in Hōma. David, the Nelson Tents, that was unanimously supported, was it not?
Look, I wasn't there for the vote, but I think so.
You're okay with that?
Oh, well, clearly the ACT Party voted for it. I don't know if everybody did, but we did. And yes, we believe in property rights. We believe in the rule of law and the sanctity of contract. You had a group of people that were clearly made a promise. They went to court. The court said they had a case. And the government said, look, we're going to put an end to this, compensate you, and move on, as we have with treaty settlements up and down the country, and we'll continue to do when NAPU finally get together with a mandate. That's the right thing to do, to have a country where everyone has equal rights under the law to protect their property and their freedom to be who they want to be. That's the basic starting point that the ACT Party always has, and we showed it in supporting this Nelson 10th bill.
You mentioned contractual legitimacy. Does that extend to the treaty?
Well, it certainly does, but unfortunately in the last 40 years, the way that the courts and the Waitangi Tribunal and the public service and some in academia have distorted it, have changed it from being a contract that says, you know, the government's the kāwanatanga, people have the right to self-determine and live their lives as they see fit, all lives and all rights are equal, they've really bastardised it into a compact which the Court of Appeal summed up as a partnership between races. Well, there was never a contract that would turn us into a country divided into two collectives delineated by race. It was supposed to be a contract that gave everybody the right to live here with the same rights and duties. Ngā tikanga katoa rite tahi. That's what we believe in. And I think it would have been much better for New Zealand if the Treaty Principles Bill had passed and said that's what the treaty means. The treaty was not meant to divide us. Treaties are supposed to bring people together. However, there is still a large lobby that wants that divisive vision of a partnership between races, a collectivist vision, where in order to find out your place in society, you first have to check your ancestry. I don't think we're going to unlock our potential. I think if we take that approach, I think New Zealanders of all backgrounds would succeed under a regime of one law for all and one future together. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't have your own rights, I mean, or your own culture or your own language. I look at charter schools. You know, anyone can apply for a charter school if they meet the performance targets. And in many cases, te ao Māori, tikanga, te reo Māori, are being practiced proudly by people in charter schools all the way from Te Rito up in the far north. I just saw their attendance figures last night. They are knocking it out of the park, all the way down to Te Aratika, and down on the Kapiti coast, Ngāti Toa. So, you know, we got all these people running charter schools doing fantastically, and it's a perfect example of what the ACT Party believes the treaty should mean. Same rights and duties, same opportunity, do it your way, that's cool, but nobody is better or first or, you know, above anyone else.
It would be nice if there was some continuation or continuity, even that there could be, you know, political change. We saw last time because charter schools came, then went, then came back. So it's going to be an interesting one going forward. Just to finish this up, David, the PSA and the right for public servants to take part in reo Māori advocacy, i.e. in Te Wiki or Te Reo Māori, perhaps attending parades, it appears they're being dissuaded from attending a right as a worker in this country for what is effectively a government sponsored through Te Tauira Whiti Te Reo Māori event.
Well, I mean, put it this way: if you're a British born New Zealander and you want to go and, I don't know, watch the Ashes or the Edinburgh Tattoo, then I think you should be able to do that. But, you know, it's going to come out of your annual leave, just like any other activity people want to do. And this is the core of this idea, Te Wiki o Te Reo Māori, very important to many New Zealanders. And if that's what they want to do, they want to take time off and do it. But I have no problem with that. In fact, I'd encourage them. You know, people are better and happier when they connect with their identity and themselves. But if the proposal is that people get to get different treatment and some people's background and culture takes precedence over others, I'm opposed to that.
Appreciate you our cordial. Look forward to another one soon. Thanks very much for your time today, David.
Always. Thanks,
Tēnā koe. Thank you.